You're listening to Focus on 107.7 The Wolf. I'm John Damschroeder. My guest today is former Ohio Attorney General Mark Dann, currently one of the preeminent consumer protection lawyers in the entire United States. A man who, as an Ohio State Senator during the CoinGate scandal, used Public Record Act cases and his legislative office to force a law enforcement investigation that was strongly resisted by the Bureau of Workers' Compensation. By way of full disclosure, I will tell you that Mark has recently served as my lawyer in a public records lawsuit I took to the Ohio Supreme Court regarding the contracts and portfolio information in an alternative investment fund created by the Ohio Public Employees Retirement System. We settled that case with stipulation of some key facts regarding the Glouston, Ohio Midwest Fund, which has $300 million of state retirement money. The first key disclosure this suit forced is that OPERS has no idea what it owns from that $300 million investment. The Glouston contract with OPERS precludes the state from knowledge of what is in the investment portfolio it funded or how much was paid for the investments. Mark, share for the audience your reaction when this information was first revealed. You were the first person to know this.
Well, after I kicked my jaw up from the table, I actually made the lawyers for Glouston tell me twice that they would agree. They were arguing that they were unable to provide us with certain records because those records didn't exist. And of course, my response was, well, the only reason that they wouldn't exist is if for some reason OPERS hasn't asked for nor Glouston provided the fund level documentation for this particular investment. And they said, well, that's correct. And so I said, well, you know, if we're going to settle this case, we're going to need an affirmative statement by either OPERS or Glouston that that's exactly what happened here, because that, in fact, would mean there were no such public records. But the reason that there aren't public records is, frankly, more disturbing than probably what we'd have learned if we had them, because we do have some. We were able to get Glouston to agree to provide us with substantial additional documents and financial information about the funds, and certainly there are disturbing facts there. But the lack of oversight and the conscious disregard of Glouston's obligations to keep the people who are using the OPERS system for their retirement. And the folks that are in charge at OPERS involved and knowledgeable about their investment is truly disturbing. I wouldn't have an investment that I manage that way, and I can't imagine, John, that any of the listeners to this broadcast podcast would have that either. And so it's a truly eye-opening revelation. And this is just one, as you know, of 141 alternative investments and hedge funds that are held just by the Ohio Public Employees Retirement System. These funds are not insubstantial. They make up 31% of the OPERS portfolio. And so the idea that OPERS has blindly entrusted pensioners' money to these hedge fund managers and relied on their cumulative representations about the value of those and performance of those funds is a truly shocking and disturbing development. And before I go further, John, I just want to say that how lucky Toledo is to have somebody of your character and your persistence and determination and, frankly, deep understanding of both state government and investments. Because really, as hard as it is to believe, John Damschroeder, who I'm talking to right now, is the only thing between the beneficiaries of Ohio's pensions and the misdeeds of those who manage them.
Well, thank you for those kind words, Mark. And given the secrecy allowed in the contract between Glouston Ohio Midwest Fund and the firms they've invested the Ohio money into, had we not settled the case, how long would it have taken for the information to be revealed?
Well, they would have. There's no question that this would have, particularly on the part of OPERS, even more so than their contractor, Glouston. I think this we would have had to take this to the Ohio Supreme Court. We would have had a hearing. They would have had to make a decision. We would have had to frame up very kind of complex issues for the judges to decide.
But we were going to be sued before you could even get to the Ohio Supreme Court for that to take place. I mean, how long would the underlying cases have taken?
Easily 3 or 4 years by the time we would get it all. So the settlement made sense, particularly in light of the acknowledgement of the lack of oversight. And of course, you know, and John, you're more familiar with the details of the information that was provided, but there's also disturbing information about the amount of fees that the public pensions or that OPERS in this particular setting is paying to the Glouston Fund. And we imagine, and I know John has that you've teed up public records requests to other funds in OPERS and in the other pension funds. But I think what we're going to learn is that the fees, the millions of dollars of fees being paid to these folks, is far more than it would cost the public pension funds in this state to invest in bonds and stocks and the traditional stock market investments and treasury bonds and so forth that would have yielded over time a higher return.
Well, we knew that as a fund of funds, the Glouston investment would be very high cost because each of the investment managers is taking a fee off the top. Last year, 4% of the funds invested were consumed by fees. As a guy who is also very deep in the investment world, put that in perspective for our listeners, please.
Well, look, you know, one of the things we learned in this litigation is that OPERS sees itself as the tail, and even though they've made a different protestation, and these hedge fund managers are the dog. They're just the opposite should be the case. The Ohio Public Employees Retirement System is one of the most desirable investors in the world. They have a huge availability of funds. They have a huge need to invest those funds and to diversify their portfolio. And as a result of that, they should be able to set better terms with those hedge fund managers than you or I could get, or a smaller pension fund could get, or a corporation looking to invest its funds could get, because they're so big and they have so much money available to invest. Yet OPERS almost passively just accepts two things. One, terms that, you know, that they protest are standard terms in the industry. Well, you know, the standard terms are made by the members of the industry. And two, that they allow those pension fund, those fund managers to self-determine what their performance is and therefore what their fees are.
Well, let's talk about that. The contract
that's troubling too.
The contract gives Glouston the sole responsibility to set financial values on the investments. And it even allows them to use valuations set by the managers of the funds the state has blindly invested in. Can we trust valuations set by management of firms with the Ohio investment money? I mean, whoever admits they have an ugly baby?
Yeah. You know, famous last words are trust me. I mean, I don't know. A lot of people trusted Bernie Madoff when he told them what his funds were worth. And what their investment in the funds were worth, and honestly, his funds may have been less opaque than what we've seen just from this one investment fund that OPERS has. And you know, I'm anxious to start to see the contracts and the understandings with the others. But I can't imagine that they're that much different.
You know, I've learned through my reporting from a confidential source within the Ohio Public Employee Retirement System investment staff that the retirement system managers responsible for alternative investments get large financial bonuses based on asset performance. Now, given that there's zero independent confirmation of values, and strong financial incentive to use optimistic valuations, isn't there an open door to profit from fictional performance?
Well, absolutely. And more disturbingly, you've got public employees who are doing nothing in earning extra money based on their on doing nothing. That doesn't make any sense either.
Mark, there's a government accounting rule specifically created in recent years to force public pensions to reveal the fair market value of their alternative investments. Given the total blindness on the investment portfolio, is it possible that this Government Accounting Standards Board Rule number 72 is actually being adhered to by the Ohio Public Employees Retirement System?
Well, it again, I'm a lawyer, so I've got to be a little bit more cautious in how I talk about this stuff. But it depends. I mean, if the government standards intended that people were to rely on the exclusively on the representations of their investment managers, then sure, they're complying.
Well, let's put it to you this way: if the spirit of the rule, which is basically described as fair market valuation, is kept, is it possible to be, you know, within the standard understanding of the language in this case that purports
to give me some
insight?
Right. I mean, now, granted, these types of investments are hard to value because they're not sold on an open market. But there are methods and techniques, and so for example, in the case of the fund that we've examined most closely, this Gladstone Midwest Fund, of which, by the way, I don't think we've mentioned this, OPERS is the only investor in the fund. What we've seen is this, that the investment staff of OPERS couldn't possibly be doing the type of due diligence to verify the representations of Gladstone of the fair market value of the assets that have been acquired because they don't have the data necessary to do so, and they've admitted that. So it would be impossible. It is literally, at least for this fund, and I'm not going to stretch beyond what we've seen with our own eyes, and believe me, we're going to see more with our own eyes if I know you very well, John.
Right, but it is fair to conclude that if OPERS doesn't have strong standards in a fund where they're the 100% investor, essentially they're the only client of Gladstone in this, when they're an additional player in giant funds, they can't possibly have any stronger...
Well, I think it'd be less likely they're going to get good data in those funds. But again, because of the nature of the fund and the desirability of having a hedge fund having OPERS as a client, I mean, they are like... If you talk about the old scale, they're on a scale of 1 to 10 as an attractiveness to investment managers. OPERS is a 12. I mean, they have got tons of money to invest. They can invest large chunks at one time. I mean, think about it from your perspective. If you're trying to build a hedge fund, is it easier to get 10 $500 million contributions or 100, $50 million contributions? Obviously, you want the guys that can, the guys and women that can put a $500 million check in your account, and that should give them the leverage to insist on the fund level information that will allow them to draw their own conclusions as to the market value. Yet it's pretty clear from what we've seen so far in your efforts, John, that they don't. They don't insist on that, nor do they get it, nor do the funds offer it.
Now, we've red flagged some very significant issues in the OPERS alternative investment oversight arena. And as you mentioned, more than 30% of the entire fund is invested in hard-to-value alternatives. The advisor to the OPERS Board of Trustees is a firm called AON Hewitt. They've been paid more than $3.2 million for their advice on investments, but they're also being paid $627,000 to do a fiduciary audit looking at the OPERS investment process. Can they be expected to note these issues that we're raising here since they've been part of the decisions?
Well, I think it would be less likely that the same firm that's giving the advice would in their fiduciary audit question the advice that their own company is giving. Certainly, there are lots of incentives for them not to do that. And frankly, there are plenty of qualified fiduciary auditors, including, by the way, some outstanding auditors that work in a place called the Ohio Auditor's Office, that could be doing this work with independence and without any risk of that conflict of interest. And why OPERS chose to go in that direction is truly beyond me.
This is the Ohio Retirement Study Council that hired them. OPERS would have to pay the bill. But
right.
The independent Ohio Retirement Study Council, which is set up in Ohio law, as you know, to oversee all five of the public pensions.
Well, that's even worse, unless AON Hewitt concealed their role with OPERS to the members of the Ohio Retirement Study Council.
They didn't do that, but they did.
That's just dumb. That's just dumb. Why would you do that?
They asserted that they would be independent. And even more troubling here, the law that requires a fiduciary audit every 10 years of each of these Ohio public retirement funds requires that the auditor be selected that is independent. Now, in the request for proposal on bids, the Ohio Retirement Study Council took it upon itself to change the word independent, which is in the Ohio law, to the word qualified, and they awarded the contract to AON Hewitt. Is it legal? Former Attorney General Mark Dan. Can Ohio
pay that? Boy, I think that's a question that deserves close scrutiny, and I encourage, you know, Attorney General Yost to take a look at that, and I would encourage the state auditor, Faber, to also take a look at that stuff.
Is there anything the Ohio public pension retirees who oppose the investment practices at OPERS, is there anything they can do to fight one-sided deals like the contracts we've uncovered?
Well, those are the things that we actually represent some members of the who are individual members of OPERS who have asked us to take a look at the what potential remedies that they have, and we're looking at a variety of potential approaches to this, things like a taxpayer's lawsuit, something akin to a corporate derivative lawsuit, or even just a straight out breach of fiduciary duty claim. It's a little tougher for individual members to hold state-owned pensions accountable because they're not state pensions are not subject to the federal Employment Retirement Security Act, ERISA. And if this were a private pension, if this were GM's pension, the members of those pensions would have standing, statutory standing, to bring claims if they had the impression that the fund managers were breaching their fiduciary duties to them. It's a little less clear in public pensions, but I think because of the stakes and because of the huge amounts of money that are flowing into these opaque alternative investments, I think it is a very worthwhile enterprise to try to figure that out.
Now, given that Ohio has poured far more money than it gave CoinGate criminal Toledo's Tom Noe into contracts that are wide open to the same sort of abuse that put Noe in prison, management fees taken in advance, profit payments based on self-appraisal, and continued blind faith that there's no problem, we're making money. Is it time to commute Noe's sentence and admit it was only unrelenting coverage by the Blade that really put him in prison, that everything he did is happening potentially right now and with far more money?
Well, I don't know, John. My mom used to say that two wrongs don't make a right, but certainly, it does. It does. It certainly rings of hypocrisy that Tom Noe's in prison for doing things that Ohio's public pensions are once again engaged in, and there are fund managers who, you know, frankly, have much better suits and jets and much better manners than Tom Noe ever had.
I mean, following the CoinGate scandal, the Bureau of Workers' Compensation has cleaned up its act. And in fact, in 10 of the last 11 years, there have been discounts or rebates, essentially, to Ohio employers. Do you get the feeling, looking at the documents that we have been able to win in this legal process, that it's going to take something like a CoinGate scandal to force the pensions to clean up their act?
I think, based on my, you know, I've been hanging around Ohio government and politics now for 40 years. God, I sound like an old man. But my experience has been that that's usually what it takes for anybody to pay attention to things like this. Look, I mean, even our conversation today, John, is full of jargon and in terms of art, and it's complicated stuff to understand. And one of the things that's important is for elected officials to pay attention to these things, first of all, and secondly, then to be able to, and it's one of the things I was most proud of in my political career, is I felt like I was able to translate some of this stuff into terms that ordinary people could understand. And that's, frankly, the job of the loyal opposition, and I'm gravely disappointed in the work of the Democratic Party at the state level, who have just been silent, if not complicit, in allowing this to happen. Remember, John, many of these hedge fund managers hire lobbyists to lobby for the right to have PERS investments. Many of them have political relationships, or some of them have political relationships with public officials in Ohio. And the folks that have been in charge for the last 20 years plus have been the Republican Party. And where are the Democrats? Why aren't they raising these issues? Because I think it does really expose the danger of kind of over collaborative one party government and a system that, frankly, you know, goes back even further to Vern Reif, who is a Democrat, and others. Of pay to play in Columbus, I know you've used the phrase crony capitalism, that, you know, friendships and trading of favors as well as campaign contributions to open the door for private enterprise to make money from government decision making, and only the favored entities win, and I think that is a possible explanation for the kinds of funds and the kinds of investments we're seeing in the public pensions.
Well, I was always suspicious of the timing of the Glouston, Ohio Midwest Fund, because it was created as there was controversy over Drive Capital, the organization created by former Jobs Ohio, the founding Jobs Ohio czar Mark Kwame, the California native, who is a very close associate of former Governor John Kasich. And in fact, Kasich's largest single campaign contributor in the 2016 presidential election. Essentially, Ohio State University got enormous pressure and controversy over the fact that they put $50 million into Drive Capital of university endowment money. It took an act of former President Gordon Gee overriding his investment staff. In fact, the chief financial officer at OSU resigned over this issue. Simultaneous to this, Glouston, Ohio Midwest Fund is created by OPERS, and an investment at a size we cannot determine because of the fact that no records exist, was made in Drive Capital. Do you think that's seems classic crony capitalist to me. What's your take?
Well, it certainly can the implications all add up to the fact that this was quite intentionally done in order to funnel money to Mr. Kwame's hedge fund. And it may be the best investment in the world. I don't know.
Well, it couldn't possibly be, Mark, because if they made it directly, it would have been less expensive.
Well, that's true. That's true. I mean, if they wanted to make it, it certainly seems to me to be a breach of the fiduciary duty of the fund to its members to have done this so deviously. If that was their intention, you're right. They probably should have just invested in the fund instead of getting somebody else to front for it. I guess
that simultaneous to this investment, Oprah's told the Dayton Daily News, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the Toledo Blade, and the Ohio Associated Press that they had been approached for an investment by Mr. Kwame and that they turned down that investment because the fees were too high and the fund was too new and thus too risky. Meanwhile, they made the investment in a way that would be secret. What's that tell
right.
us?
Right. Right. I don't think you don't need a Columbo to figure that one out.
That's why I invited the former Ohio Attorney General and the man behind the CoinGate collapse.
It certainly creates the implication that there's something less than honorable going on here. That may be the governance and the pension investing strategy that the members of OPERS want. I certainly wouldn't want it if I had a stake in that fund.
But isn't that an example of the political issue that the Ohio Democratic Party is just leaving dormant, either out of ignorance or
fear? It's the silent, the complicity. Look, complicity may be too strong a word, but the silence of the Democrats in the House and the Senate. I mean, look, there were only 11 Democratic senators in 2005 when the CoinGate story started to 2004 when the CoinGate story started to break, I was one of those 11. There were 22 Republicans. They could even override a veto without us. But by speaking out and by raising questions and by requesting public documents. And by insisting that the powers that be in the state pay attention to these issues, we were able to get a massive change in how the PwC investment portfolio was managed. And two, in 2006, I was lucky enough, along with other Democrats, to be elected to the statewide offices in the state. So it's good politics as well as good government. The only explanation for why Democrats wouldn't be taking this approach is that they're somehow complicit in the crony capitalism that's going on.
Well, on that sad note, that the only people speaking out on this seem to be you and I.
Well, at least for now. I think that it's growing. I've gotten some calls, I know, since the publicity about your lawsuit, John, has come to the fore, from members of the pension funds who are very concerned, for leaders of groups of retirees, state retirees in the various disciplines, SERS and PERS and STRS and so forth. They've approached me and expressed their concerns, but I think it's going to take a concerted effort and a mobilization of that public opinion. One of the huge problems is that that many of the newspapers in the state, and soon to be even more, are owned by the very hedge funds that are receiving these investments. So they don't have a lot of incentive to do thorough reporting on the issue. What's left is kind of these more modern approaches to journalism, like a podcast, the documentary that we've begun to work on to try to expose all this stuff.
Well, thank you, Mark, for both your appearance today and your assistance in my lawsuit. I would not have been able to do it without you. So once again, thank you for caring about.
Well, thank you, and congratulations on your new gig in Toledo, one of my favorite places in the state. So, I hope you enjoy your time there.
I shall. Thanks, Mark. Once again,
thanks. All right.
Bye now.